SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 162 XM, 207 Sports Zone 999, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com. And I every morning, Tina yells down to me when she wakes up. She says, "What's the weather going to be?" What's the weather going to be? It's going to be more gorgeous than it was the previous day. It's just unbelievable. It's crazed. It's glorious. Yeah, it's unbelievable. And the timing is very good because particularly the next couple of days, the next 3 days, we're getting ready for the release tomorrow of the pre-entries, then that'll occupy us certainly Thursday and Friday. But we've got the opportunity. I mentioned the two carryovers yesterday and hadn't even gotten to the Keeneland pick five carryover tomorrow. I mean, in my write-up, Kerry Palooza, unbelievable, just an amazing confluence, really, when you think about it. You've got tomorrow, $300,000 pick five carryover. Nick Tamaro is going to join us in the third hour. And then on Thursday, $124,000 double pick six carryover at Aqueduct for the buck, and then $153,000 pick six carryover Friday at Santa Anita. The $2 pick six increment, as we talked at the beginning of the meet, going into Santa Anita autumn, it's been exactly what was hoped as a trigger for carries. The Thursday carryover, it's almost like it's programmed in New York. It's like, was it six out of 7 weeks or whatever it is? I forgot to ask Dave Grenning about that. We've looked already. I've already done, in fact, I pretty much have written up the pick five for Keeneland tomorrow. So Nick and I'll go over it. And I also reached out to Jeremy. We'll see if the Plonkster has got some thoughts as well. That may maybe tomorrow, because a lot of times Jeremy does, his overnight stuff. And then, of course, he sends out you should be on his mailer. I'm about to ask him how to make sure everybody is getting it, because he sends out a post-scratch, final thoughts summary as well, each day. But all the Keeneland cards have been drawn, and looking ahead even, into Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They open, no, is it Saturday the last day? Is Saturday? I think it might be, actually. Let me take a peek. Yeah, I think Saturday's the last day. And then Churchill picks up, right? I'll confirm that. I'm not sure. But anyway, the stakes are lined up. It's almost too much, these advance draws. It kind of makes for a little too much activity. But you've got, you do have the Mother Goose on Saturday in New York, too. We'll talk to Andy later, and I'm sure he's looked ahead a little bit to it. So we'll and the Bold Ruler and the 49er. And at Keeneland, Bryant Station, the Fayette. Friday, they've got the Valley View. And, I mean, not everyone overflow. 10 in the Fayette. But overflow in the Valley View and in the Bryant Station. So we basically got to just keep ourselves occupied until these pre-entries come out. And they'll come out tomorrow. I actually am also in conversation with Tim Schramm. I'll probably talk to Tim. We'll probably have Tim on Friday and lay out the BCBC, seeing a lot of pop-ups and stuff for the BCBC. And so we should, you know, keep that in mind. And, of course, we travel Saturday to Southern California. And we'll start Breeders' Cup coverage live at Del Mar on Monday. But Thursday, Wednesday evening, when, you know, when PPs become available, the working PPs of the pre-entries, and you can start to organize at least your thoughts a little bit. Get familiar. That's what the last 10 days have been for a little bit, as brought in the DRF correspondents to go through their horses in their respective divisions. And there hasn't been too much movement. There were those defections or, you know, those demurrings that I mentioned yesterday. Sweet Azteca and Stronghold. And then a couple of things trickled out yesterday. I saw Steve Anderson reporting. Steve's always great for that. Mentioning, you know, the conversation with trainers about, you know, what they entered and cross entries, and Dave Grenning did a piece too, following up with Chad Brown and Chad's workers, and, you know, for instance, the domestic product is going to cross enter in the sprint and the dirt mile, but the dirt mile seems, you know, 92% certain, things like that. And we'll be able to get organized going into Thursday. Getting organized for today, let me set up shop, and we'll do a little bit of recapping from yesterday. That includes the sale, day one, and it was good, very solid, very much on par with last year, apparently. We'll see what time Jessica Martini arrives at the sales grounds at Phasic, but might have a chance to talk to her. Tina Bond is going to join us at 9:35, 9:40, and we haven't talked to Tina yet. And, of course, head of NYTHA, the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, and Tina, you know, taking over that position from Joe Applebaum. Actually reached out to Joe. Joe's been working on a really interesting project that is inching close to the end zone, and I can't wait till we can get him on to talk about it. But it's not, he's waiting for, I guess they're waiting for some rubber stamping, but it's very cool. So I know I've been hinting at this since summer. It'll reach fruition sooner than later. But Tina's going to join us, and I'm sure we'll touch on some NYTHA issues, because we haven't had a chance, you know, since her tenure began. But she's involved as well in a website launch that is coming this week, and we'll get all the details from her. And I don't know if I don't know if I should wait. But it's you know, it's basically a recruiting tool, and it kind of fills the same format as the light up racing concept and amplify, you know, the idea of presenting the game to a potential new audience that might come in and take an interest and, you know, trying to, you know, put new eyes on the game and help people understand, you know, why they should give racing a chance, as it were. So I'll let her reveal the website info. All right, we'll save that. Dale Day, Dale couldn't join us yesterday, so we'll do the Remington Oklahoma Classics recap as promised. Chance to go through the Friday night action with Dale. Looking forward to checking in with him. Andy is, of course, in hour three, as well as Nick. That's kind of a rarity to have Andy and Nick. And I'm sure I know Andy has done. I mean, I know he's done Thursday, so. We'll get some thoughts, and it's going to be very tough for me Thursday. Whenever there's a big carryover, or doesn't have that be big, whenever there's a sequence that you have a horse involved in, you know, what are you supposed to do? we've got Landauer in that eighth on Thursday, the anchor leg of that carryover, and. Honestly, I think he can win. I think he could be fifth. I mean, it's a really well-matched group, and a lot of them coming out of that race last month where, you know, he ran into a little traffic late and kind of, I don't want to say I'm not... don't want to be rough on Jose Gomez, but kind of ran up on heels a little bit and, then when he got open and saw daylight, he came running and he just got beat. But stretches out to 9 furlongs, mile and an eighth. And there feels like there's 6 horses that... in here out of the 10. And in fact, as it happens, there's the horse that Gary's got at Eddie F, and that'll lead me into yesterday in the Futurity. But they've got Sweet Tone, who, if there's a scratch, Sweet Tone is going to get in, who ran very well in that same race and ended up dead heating for second, beaten, you know, there were basically 5 horses that were separated by 3/4 of a length, and we were fifth. So it'll be tough. I'm anxious to see what Andy's thoughts are in here, because it's a well-matched group. Jose Lascano is going to ride Landauer for us, and I'm kind of excited, actually, to have Jose. I mentioned Eddie F. and Gary. Well, yesterday at Finger Lakes, let's get into some of the quick hits from yesterday. And... you know, it was pretty obvious who the major players were in that Futurity and under whose radar and Bold Fortune. Well, there was no doubt when they came for the turn, Bold Fortune had built up a lead at that point and ran off under Dylan Davis. And, you got 490 for your... for your $2. Fortune Farm, Richard Nikolai and George Weaver with Double D. And you actually had Mel Giddings, and Anthony mentioned Share the Loot, the maiden, second timer. And, Sean Bridgemahan, of course, who is with Melanie. In all ways, shapes, and form. And Sean gave a nice ride and came running to get second in here. And, you know, this was $160-something thousand-dollar pot. This is a nice, you know, the Futurities We don't run as many futurities as they do in quarter horses, but you know, that's how you get a pool like this. You pay in, and everybody gets, you know, the pool grows to this level, 165,000. One thing that's funny about these is 165,368. That was the purse. So Bold Fortune just under 100,000 earnings, 99,220 for the win, and $33,073 for share of the loot. Under whose radar, Back on Dirt, and ran evenly, was just sort of there, and you know, went favored, went off at 90 cents, really could not keep up with Bold Fortune. And I have not checked to see if Fig, there is a 89 buyer for Bold Fortune. So this is a very nice homebred, obviously, for Nikolai, out of a posse mare, and basically backs up the 84 buyer at Aqueduct when winning off by 10. So this is a very nice horse. I'll have to talk next time we talk to George. We'll get some answers. The other stakes and some of the other spots that we talked about with Anthony, you know, Sweet Brown Sugar, as mentioned, you know, came back for Paul Barrow, and happens to be a horse bred by Chet and the late Mary Broman, collected filly, and she won off. She was, you know, she was, you know, 1-5, and ran like it. And then you had that was the Jack Better Be Right, and then you had the other stake where you also had the short priced Maker's Candy. So actually, the wins got spread around. Actually, Dylan Davis, Jeremiah Flores on Sweet Brown Sugar, and Manny Franco made the trip worthwhile, like coming up and winning on Maker's Candy. And you know, the one of those races that we touched on with Anthony, we got a decent price. Brock Mononoff, who you know, kind of winked, 5-1, paid 12-10. And we should also mention the 3,500th win, right, for Mike Ferraro. That came in the, I think it was in the that fourth starter allowance. I was watching as the afternoon progressed. So they had a nice day. And in fact, I'm curious. I don't know if I've got the ninth. They did. I tell you, they did 1.6 million at Finger Lakes yesterday. So nice day there. And then also, let me get in the Presque Isle result. And you also had the short priced winner there, 2-5, the Boys Warrior, way too good, and just kind of won in hand. We did, you know, that the other Warrior that we talked about with Pimo, Ballad of Warrior, was second in the Mark McDermott. So the stakes season is over. The stakes calendar wrapped up at Presque Isle. That was Tim Girton and the Warriors Reward Team for the Exacta. And, you know, they're, that allowance race that was, you had the 10-1 shot of Kate DeMassey and Pewter Stable, their homebred Princess Runaway. Yeah, paid $21.80 and made the late action worthwhile. And that's the sixth win. It's a six-year-old mare. It's only started 16 times. But she's had a nice year. She's won twice this year. She won three times last year. A little late, you know, kind of modest set of PPs early in her career. But it's been quite good. They were patient. And Kate, you know, Kate DeMassey does a nice job. So there was a nice mutual. And Ferraro, actually, at Presque Isle, too. Our man Mike won that allowance, seventh. And then you had, it was not Thalberg, but Iraq that won for Scooter Davis. And they had late pick four, paid $750. And really, you know, all you had to do was come up with Princess Warrior at 10 to 1. So nice. Nice end to the stakes calendar of the season, and the season at as it winds down at Presque Isle. I don't know if Jess is going to be able to join us. I've been kind of reaching out to her, so let me give you a little bit of sales activity as soon as I find it. First of four sessions and little over $13.2 million, and averaging just about 50,000 and a median of 20,000. Buyback 24.5%, very similar to last year. And he had a pair of colts, an Into Mischief and a Quality Road, fetched $350,000, and the Quality Road went early in the session, hip 39. Lynch Badges Limited and Camas Park Stud, the breeders, and Brookdale consigned. And the Novogratz team take that one home, Quality Road. And then late in the session, the Into Mischief that was bred by Newtown Manor Stud and consigned by Blake Albina, $350 here for Liz Crow and team signing. And what else can we tell you? They had the top first crop sire, Charlatan, again, who's been strong all season, $300,000. So this was this is out of Late Night Powwow, the lovely stakes mare, Breeze Easy, and bought by Charlie Allen, consigned by Eaton. Those are among the, yeah, they had the McKinsey that Mandy Pope bred, colt. The Charlton was a filly, the highest filly, well, highest Spitestown filly too, that Chad Summers bought, and bred by Cypress Creek and Hill and Dale, consigned $300 for that filly, and the Charlatan filly. Those were the session topping fillies. But there was also Peter Bradley bought the McKinsey colt out of Cat's a Dream that Mandy Pope bred. So there come some of the highlights. 16. I'm just reading some of the takeaways from TDN. Monday, top 16 priced yearlings bought by. 13 sold by and bought by 13 different consigners. That's great. I'd love to see stuff, love to see the things spread around, right? All right, day two, and if we get a chance to talk to Jess, we will take her up if we get that opportunity this morning. Back to the set of this really kind of funny set of carryover opportunities, and at Keeneland, eight race cards at Keeneland tomorrow, and at Aqueduct on Thursday, and then Friday a nine race card at Santa Anita. So 4 through 9 at Santa Anita, and tomorrow races 4 through 8 at Keeneland. Starts at 2:36. Make a mental note. It's going to be there's plenty of things happening, you know, with waiting for the release of the pre-entries. The committee will work all day today prioritizing and putting together their priority list, obviously for the overflow, the capacity fields, and then all the cross entry stuff. There's a few hoops to jump, but we'll look forward to that tomorrow. And in the meantime, you can dig into this. This is not an easy sequence. You've got a $32,000 claimer on the main that starts it, field of 10. Then you got a dozen maidens, older maiden fillies and mares on the grass. And there's a group of, I thought, four that were the clear contenders. Then there's another group that is not far off. Let's put it that way. There's another five. It's a field of 12. And I'll touch on a couple of these things as we wait for Tina Bond to join us. Then in the third leg, you're looking at a second level allowance, mile and an eighth for three-year-old fillies. And this is a good group, and a lot of familiar names of some sophomores that have participated in the stakes season for three-year-olds, and that includes Everland. Yeah, Everland in here for Eric Foster. 8-1 on Nick's line, but landed for Wesley Ward, and intricate for Brendan Walsh. Audacious for Pletcher, not far off. And Neon Icon, Rusty Arnold, who was, you know, my feelings on Rusty. He is just super dangerous. And when, particularly when you're here at Keeneland, you know, look three times. And be sure to look closely at anybody that has, has won both on the turf and on the main at Keeneland. It's when there's a predilection, and then on the flip side, horses that have not run well, particularly on the grass at Keeneland, take note. And that's going to come into play in the fourth leg, where Arrest Me Red is your 7-2 favorite, and it's a turf sprint. You hear the name Arrest Me Red, you know you're dealing with turf sprinting. Field of 12. There's 12 in that sixth as well. But field of 12, and Wesley Ward figures prominently because Arrest Me Red, DeTory rides. But then there's a former Wesley player in here, Out of Door. And Out of Door has been more successful at Keeneland than Arrest Me Red. Arrest Me Red's 0-3. He's got 1/3. And all his wins have come elsewhere. And that, to me, is always notable here. If they like this turf course, they get extra credit. If they don't, on talent alone, you respect a horse like Arrest Me Red, but I picked him third, to be honest, behind not just Out of Door, but also behind Mischievous Rogue. Rosario for Maker. Mischievous Rogue is 8-1 and is absolutely a major win candidate. And then, speaking of dangerous Keeneland connections, Victoria Oliver. Yeah, Mostache. Good old Mostache in here. I thought, those were the top four. You know, there are a couple of horses that are, that'll make you look at them once or twice. Mark of the Z, for instance, who's going to be a price and who likes the course. But to me, Mischievous Rogue, Arrest Me Red, Out of Door, and a little Mostache. And then that gets you to the anchor leg of this pick five sequence. $300,000, you got to figure. The last time we did this at Keeneland, I was way low. I guessed 3.5 times, and it was more like 5.5 times. And, of course, from Sunday to Wednesday, gives everybody a chance to kind of retool. So, $300,000 figure, I'm going to say 1.7, right? Figure, 5 times, another 1.5 million. 1.7 million, yeah, or something like that, at least. And, 10 by 12 by 12 by 12 by 12. So people are going to stretch, I think, for some coverage. That gets us to the two-year-old maiden special nightcap. They're going to go 6.5. And there's three horses that have run that seem more likely than others. There's a number of firsters, but there's firsters from barns that typically need one. Touchy, 8-5 for Ward, has run two races that, could have easily have won. Hitchcock, Peter Urton, second timer, 6-1. That's who I put on top. And there's a 15-1 shot that is a little dirtied up or a little obscured, but on Figs, Can Do Andrew, 15-1 for Doug Anderson and Cisco Arrieta. Absolutely. Then among the firsters, I suppose Original Sin is going to take money for Brad Cox. Eric Foster's got Campaign Trail, who's 20-1 and who ran a race, a debut race that, if he gets back to that, is possible. Other than Original Sin, who they made, Nick made 7-2 second choice as a firster. I guess you have to respect, right? There's a McPeak. There's a McPeak firster in here that made me laugh, because if you heard Kenny with us, it's probably 3 weeks ago, when he was coming up to watch Torpedo Anna's work, and he was going to spend a few days at Saratoga. She continues to go well. In fact, I want to get Dave Norton to visit and talk about the horses that have stayed at Saratoga, the Mott Barn and Chad's and Torpedo Anna. But McPeak's got a firster in here that's on the rail in this nightcap, a McKinsey colt, and it's Fern Circle. So it's a house horse, one of the groups that Kenny buys horses for, and they named it Harvest and Hearth, as opposed to Hearth and Harvest, which Kenny talked about. That's out on the what do they call that creek? There's a name, not Turtle Creek. There's a name for it. Where the boathouse is for Skidmore's crew, the rowing team. They've really expanded that. It's a beautiful. They've built a pair of really nice boathouses for their crew. But Tina and I hadn't been in literally years. I kid you not, we had not been in years to Hearth and Harvest. And I think Kenny actually motivated us, and we went. It's unchanged. That's where the name came from. It's kind of funny. That they named a horse after Hearth and Harvest. Harvest and Hearth, though. Maybe I'm inversing it. Maybe it is Harvest and Hearth, and I always call it Hearth and Harvest, which is the more natural the verbiage. By the way, speaking of Italian, it's primarily the pizza at Hearth, but the salads are crazy. That restaurant, that O Sole Mio in Cranford. I took Tina on Saturday night. I told you about it on Friday. I brought it up with Guy. Just spectacular. The food is exceptional and homey. It's not, it's not like a fancy joint. It's very go if you're in the Cranford area. It's right off the literally seconds off the Garden State. Go see Francesco and Frank. Tell him you heard about it here. I don't know. Maybe he'll give you a little appetizer or something. Maybe he gave Tina. It's a BYO, by the way. Bring your own. You can bring your own bottle of wine, which is one of the fabulous things about a lot of Jersey dining. You can bring your own wine and save yourself. I'm not a wine. Never. That's one thing. I never was much of a wine drinker. Anyway. Yeah, O Sole Mio in Cranford. Highly, highly recommend. We're going to get Tina Bond in here momentarily. Let me checking on that. Well, that's Andy Belfiore. Hold it. All right. Nope. All right, we might as well get Tina. I've got, yeah, let's do that. We'll go now. By the way, I reached out to Dr. Alday. For those of you that, I don't know if you followed this story, that Steve Anderson has tracked the situation involving the quarter horses with this infectious anemia, and I had never heard of it. And there's been, a number of horses that, a contagious and hard hitting, and started last month, Los Alamitos and Lone Star. And involving the barn of Heath Taylor, including some high-level stakes quarter horses. So I reached out to Dr. Alday. He's going to join us tomorrow to explain it. Equine infectious anemia. He gave me a little bit of a. I'm not going to provide details. I'll let him explain it, and it's going to lead, I think, to a couple of other sidebar barn management type topics that I think should be very interesting. So Dr. Alday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Lubison and Reborn, tomorrow. Tina Bond is going to join us here momentarily, as soon as Brian raises her, and I'm very eager to tell you the name of the website, but I'm gonna let her do it. It's her, I think it's her project, and we'll find out who's been involved. But it's gonna launch this week, and there's been a lot of. I think very positive developments on this front, and the proactive industry proactivity in terms of trying to get messaging out there. And this is a drum that I've beat for a long time, that it's incumbent on the game and all of us to get the the right message out there, and particularly in times of of crisis, the industry learned frankly the hard way, going back a number of years, that you've got to have outreach, and you got to have a unified message and a response. And Tina Bond joins us. Good morning, Tina.
Good morning, Steve. What a beautiful morning in Saratoga, isn't it?
Every day is more beautiful than the previous. It's like this is like a second summer.
It is. We're truly blessed.
Well, and for those that don't get up here, you can't imagine. I mean, the leaves are starting to pile up now, but you can't imagine how September and October on the Oklahoma, where there's still horses training, how fabulous it is. I mean, and how just gorgeous it is, even more gorgeous than in the summer.
Well, the colors are amazing. And it's such a great place to train horses, with the Oklahoma track, and it's we're just very, very lucky.
Well, and lucky to have you taking on the responsibilities as the head of the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, and, of course, a difficult crown, Tina, to wear, going, to Rick Violette's, frankly, storied tenure in the job, and then Joe Applebaum, who had to carry on from Rick. And before we talk about this project, some thoughts about, the first few months of your tenure, and how you've found the position, and some thoughts.
Well, it's all Rick Violet's fault, I can tell you that much. It was, I don't know, 10 years ago that he asked me to run for the board, and I did, and truly had no idea what I was getting myself into. But I, when 10 years ago, I felt that we should, as an industry, we should have a PR marketing firm to try to promote this board, and because I always feel that we don't, we're not proactive, we're reactive, and so it's, I finally served for, well, I served for 3 terms, and then Joe decided to step down, and I felt there was going to be a real void there. This was not on my bucket list to do this, but I just felt that I had to, as you know, that, you know, I'm married to Jim Bond, and we have 2 boys that went to college and came back to the industry, and are trainers now themselves, and I just felt that there's too much at stake for everything in the industry that I just felt that I needed to step up and see if I could make a difference, and I elected at the end of December, and it's been a whirlwind.
In terms of the you know, the elements of the job that you've confronted, I mean, is there areas that you're surprised by? Is there, you know, particular topics that are you know, you're focusing on the most? Give us a snapshot, and you know, I know you had, we didn't get a chance to talk about it over the summer, but you know, I know that you would had some outreach about the advent of the synthetic track, the Tapeta track that's coming in at Belmont. I know that was a topic that you know, you were, you know, very involved in. Some thoughts about you know, the areas of greatest concern and interest to stakeholders in New York.
Well, exactly. It was in March when we had a webinar with the NYRA management team, and it was revealed that there would be no dirt racing in the wintertime at the new Belmont. So that was something new that we learned, and there is many, many owners, trainers, breeders that are concerned about the limited amount of dirt racing that will be available coming up, because that's what we've had, and that's what we breed for. Also, I should say that we have a farm out here just not too far from Saratoga, 15 minutes. And, you know, it takes a while to get those horses, you know, if you're breeding dirt horses, I've already got some that are in utero. So maybe it would have changed our plans as to what we were breeding. There's a lot of people that have a lot of concern about it, and, you know, I understand that synthetic is going to be an option, but it's there's a lot of people that are concerned about what the product is going to look like, and so that's important to me because, you know, I represent within New York over 6,000 people, and so, you know, everybody has their voice and needs to be heard about it. So,
in terms of surveying the horsemen, and it actually came up slightly last week when we talked to Joe McMahon. You know, Joe's got Buccero in New York, and Buccero, you know, in addition to just his general impact so far as a stallion, he has done particularly well with, you know, with horses over the synthetic, and so Joe, you know, was kind of lauding that as an option. And when we were talking breeding issues, I mean, what is there a consensus, Tina, in terms of breeders and owners, and any sense of how they're, you know, how they plan to adjust and, you know, go out and claim horses in advance of, you know, of the winter in 26? Any, you know, any anecdotes on that front?
I don't know what, you know, individuals. We did do a survey. It's on our website, NYSA website, and it showed that I think it added up to over 60% are going to race less in the winter in New York when this the synthetic comes, or they will not race at all. So I guess it depends on, you know, for trainers, it's going to end up to depend on how many dirt horses do you have. Is it worth it to stay in New York, or do they have to go to somewhere else? Do they have to go to Oakland, or do they have to go to Florida? So I think each individual is going to make that decision. Like I said, with the breeding end of it, there are no synthetic sires out there. There are dirt sires and there are turf sires. And we don't know what horses are going to transition well to a synthetic surface. There's over 18% of the top grass horses that will not transfer over to synthetic. So it's a concern because you don't really know what your product is going to look like in the future. And nobody has a crystal ball to tell what's going to happen in 2 years, except that that's what we're going to have to deal with. So I think it's just going to evolve, and we can see. I don't know that people will go out and claim just turf horses to do this, because, like I said, not all turf horses are going to transition, and not all dirt horses are going to transition. So.
Well, we got a ways to go, but it's going to be part of the future, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how it evolves. I know some people are concerned that it'll trickle over into the spring, when the spring season starts at Belmont after the winter. Yeah, that was something that was brought out early on, but Tina has there is the reality of taking races off the turf and running them on the synthetic and keeping fields together. I mean it's such a difficult equation to draw conclusions about.
It is, and I don't know what, I don't know what the handicappers and the bettors are going to think about that, because I think traditionally that synthetic racing is not what they prefer to bet on. And you can answer that more than I can answer that.
It's a funny equation. There's people who now over the years, and with what was sad about this topic, is the way in which the industry was more or less sold a bill of goods by the original era's manufacturers. How they told the racetracks, it doesn't require any maintenance. That was not true. It handles any kind of weather, hot, cold, rain, snow. That wasn't true. And that first pass, with Polytrack and Cushion Track, and all the various manufacturers. The only one that has lived up and then exceeded has been Tapeta and Michael Dickinson and his wife and what they've done, and it's so soured. The experience was so negative that it put an impression in players' minds that I can't bet it. I'm not betting it, and that was a real disservice to the game on so many levels. Now when you look at Turfway and you look at Woodbine, Presque Isle, who's wrapping up this week, there are people who have come to really like the form and the fact that the horses run on a more regular basis. Certainly than dirt horses. I mean, they're averaging more starts, and so people that wade into it, they're betting it. But it's going to be a wait and see. I think in New York, on a circuit like Naira, how everybody adjusts to it. So that's the treat.
Yes. We don't have a crystal ball, so we're just going to have to wait and see, and hopefully it's a good, strong product.
Well, that's what we got to hope. Tina Bond joining us, and of course, Tina, heading up the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. And one thing that helped prompt this visit, and it was overdue, the launch of an outreach project. And I haven't been telling anybody the name. I've been sort of foreshadowing, Tina, but you know, talk a little bit about it and how it came about, who's involved, and the launch.
So the name of it is The Heart of Horse Racing, and like I said, it's something that I feel very, very strongly about. So when I became president, I went to float this idea to the NYSA board, and we have a fantastic board. All of our members are very, very active, and it's just wonderful. And so they decided that, yeah, let's see what we can do with this. This is to create an awareness to build the sport. You know, it's like I think that the sport needs to have a voice, and we need to control the narrative. And so I don't think a lot of people see what the sport is and who the sport is. So we're all the sport, but how much we love, you know, the animals. And so we got together, and they decided they were going to, NYSA was going to fund this initiative to see where we could go from here. So we did our homework and ended up with a marketing firm in out of New York City that's a global company. And we didn't hire them until June. And in July, I said, we need to shoot some footage up here. We're going to need footage in Saratoga. So we had a film crew that came up in July, and then they came back with two crews Whitney weekend. So we have a lot of, we have over 10 hours of interviews with lots of B-roll, and of course you know how beautiful it is up here, but and lots of interviews with fans and industry stakeholders and leaders, and it was really satisfying that in every interview, everyone said that the horses are everything. And so that was just so special in itself, and it just kind of, from that point, I didn't think that we could change the name or improve on the name of The Heart of Horse Racing, because it truly, that's what everybody feels, is there's so much love and respect for these animals. And I just figured we needed a way to showcase it. You know, there's a lot of negativity when there's, in the press, when there's an incident, there's lots and lots of good stories out there, but the bad lines, headlines, sell those stories. So I just felt that we needed to do something, and there's other initiatives out there. Safety Runs First, that is fantastic. It shows all the initiatives that, the safety initiatives that the industry is doing. There's Light Up Racing that talks about how to talk about these instances and how to make people understand. So this is just another initiative that can take and mold, and we really need to bring new fans and new owners into the industry. The foal crop is dropping year by year. The racing product seems to be shrinking year by year. And so it's just, I didn't know what else to do to bring this wonderful sport to light, but it's given me over 40 years of joy, and the horses have taken me around the world, you know, several times. And so it's, I just felt it was something that I needed to try to do, and I'm very proud of it. I think we'll get there. But the first launch is to bring the stakeholders in the industry, because we're going to need their support to go on to year two and year three. It's going to be a continuing evolution of what the Heart of Horse Racing becomes and how important it becomes. But, you know, if we can do that and bring in more owners and fans, and I allude to the fans are also the bettors, the handicappers, because You know, they're a vital part of racing. We don't have that, there's no purses, there's no handle. So we all need to work together to make this industry as strong as possible so it can flourish. And it's not just the racing, you know, industry. It's going to touch, and it's not just in New York. This has to go across the country, and it has to go to, whether it's, Keeneland and the breeding farms, and I mean, everybody, it trickles down to everybody has a stake in this industry. There's so many people's lives that it touches that I really think when people take a look at this and realize that if we can grow the sport exponentially, that's going to be huge. And we have, I did an interview with Jason Worth, who owns part of Dornach, and he, you know, he's only been in this for a few years, but he was amazing at how he feels that the sport could grow exponentially. But we have to get the messaging right, and he equated it. He looked at it as a different way because him as an athlete, and he looks at the horses, and they are professional athletes, and so he had a different view. But he says that there's just so much opportunity out there, and we just need to display it and show it and get people interested and show them a way, show them the pathway to get involved.
Well, and, this has been, this is encouraging from every vantage point, the various entities that have put together these kinds of outreach. And, you know, most recently, the light up racing, which came, of course, from Australia, that was really the first, you know, professional public relations firm driven, you know, communication concept. And, you know, having professional, polished answers, to layman's questions, Tina, people that, when they see some of that low-hanging fruit reporting of lazy media, that think the industry, is basically a piñata, that's an easy mark, and that, the ready headlines and clickbait, when there's an opportunity to ridicule the sport and, play to a certain audience. We as an industry for the longest time did not have, a unified, coherent response. And the fact that, there's been this, this steady approach of wanting to, make sure people understood the value of the game, first and foremost, the value each individual horse generates, $80,000 in trickle down economies, the green space benefits, and I know I'm going off into a kind of a sidebar to what this is. I'm just looking at the website, the heart of horseracing.com, and you've got the early the early underpinnings that are in place, and you feels like you're going to grow off of it from here. But any effort that that helps the public take an interest, or even if they, frankly, Tina, even if they don't take an interest, but that they don't have a negative impression, that's a positive.
Light Up Racing was here in Saratoga a couple weeks ago and did I went to a 2-day workshop with them, and it was very interesting. It was very enlightening. And on the second day, I decided to show them the heart of horse racing, and they were very excited about it. And together, I think that, I think each one of us can change perception and can improve it, but I think together we can really build on it. So we're very excited, and I think that we'll share as much as we can about Light Up, and I'm certain that they'll share as much as they can about the heart of horse racing. And these are the things that we need to change and grow the industry. And I'm excited to be able to do this, and I'm excited to, there's a lot of people that have, you know, looked at it before it was ready, and I gave them and signed up to be ambassador. So once, you know, the launch is here, you know, and the social media channels are up and running, that, you know, I think that it's going to be very exciting. I'm excited to introduce this before the Breeders' Cup, because there's a lot of eyes on the industry right now.
Sure.
It was Breeders' Cup, and so I think that this, hopefully this will be a great conversational piece for those that are at the Breeders' Cup.
Nice. No, it's, that's very true. Triple Crown season and Breeders' Cup, the two prime pieces of real estate on the calendar that people take an interest. You mentioned the social media. Right now, it's just the website, but there'll be Instagram/TikTok / Twitter, etc.
Yeah, there will be. We're working on that. That should be up in a couple days. And we'll link all of that to the website, I'm sure.
Very nice. Well, Tina, who else is involved? Statewide, ancillary organizations have contributed to this, or is it strictly NYFA?
NYFA has backed it for the first year, and we're reaching out, and Phase Egg Tipton has committed, TOBA has committed, NYRA has committed some airtime with Tony Alvado and Fox
nice.
Sports and that, so they show a 30 or 60 second clip, you know, almost every day when they're up and running. So, you know, I think it'll get out there, and I think what it does is I think it reaches, it's going to reach the people that are involved in the industry, but just to hear the other people that, you know, in these interviews, and there'll be a lot more that we'll put up there, and there'll be a YouTube channel as well, because of, you know, over 10 hours of interviews and the fans. I mean, the second weekend they came up with one film crew, they just went into the crowd at Saratoga and just started talking to people, which is fantastic, because that's how you can really gauge where you are, you know, as an industry, and getting their input from it.
Well, and I see that people can actually, they can sign up and in terms of communications, interactions.
Yes, we've applied for a 501(c), and it's in the process. So once that becomes, available, we'll put that up there with a donate button. And like I say, everybody can become ambassadors as well. But I think if we can get the major stakeholders in the industry to support and get behind us, it's going to carry it far and wide.
Well, as always, just nice to connect, Tina, and always available to, you know, spread the word when it comes to the horsemen's organizations. And we've got a long history of visits for years with Rick Violette, and then with Joe, and now Tina Bond picking up the mantle, and a new initiative, the Heart of Horse Racing, trying to provide outreach and interaction with the lay public. Tina, best of luck. I suppose I've got to let you get a plug in for your boys and for Jim.
Yeah, thank you. I think I just, you know, we do it all, from our farm is Song Hill Thoroughbreds out in the Mechanicsville Stillwater area. And we have partnership opportunities with Bond Racing Stable. And, my husband's been a longtime trainer and had great horses. And both of our boys, Kevin and Ryan, are trainers now as well. So we're a huge supporter of aftercare. We have a lot of retirees here on the farm, as well as rehoming. And so we are all in, to say the least. And it's just a wonderful, it's a lifestyle. And once you learn that it's a lifestyle and it's so rewarding, and we live right here on the farm, and there's no better neighbors, I can tell you that much.
Well, and of course, Jim Bond, winner of over 1,200 races, and has had a spectacular career, and the boys, you know, sending him out under their name. You sent horses out under your name for a while, right?
You know, it was a very limited time.
Well, Tina, continued success, and anything we can pass along, anything you need communicated for Nitha, don't never hesitate.
Well, thank you, Steve. I appreciate the support. Thank you.
Tina Bond, everybody, and the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen Association, and some topics of the day, including the surface topic at Belmont that's coming, and this outreach project, theheartofhorseracing.com, and they're just getting going, but anything that provides a positive message is welcome, right? Speaking of welcome, we're going to welcome Dale Day back after Friday night's terrific action at Remington and the Oklahoma Classics card, and about $2 million in handle, and a lot of what we talked about, a lot of formful performances of a lot of the stars, but there were a couple of surprises, a couple of prices. Dale, good morning.
Morning, Steve. You're correct. There was a couple of expected winners that we thought would get there. They held up there to the bargain. Then there were a couple of small surprises, including the Oklahoma Classics Cup. Remington Park all-time leading owner, Danny Caldwell, does it again. He has won 3 of the Classics Cups now in his career at Remington Park, 2012, 2020, then the other night on Friday. And then all 3 of those winners he has claimed within about 3 months of that race, moved up the ladder, and turned into a stakes winner against Oklahoma Bred Company, bringing them home to win the biggest race on Classics. I think he did it with Inca Empire this time around, who surprisingly, a little bit of surprise here as well, is a half-brother to Miss Code West, the Dynamo in the 3-year-old Phillies division, who won the Distaff Handicap on Classics night, picking up her 6th win in 7 tries at Remington Park. So Inca Empire, a bit of a surprise in the biggest race, and Miss Code West, of course, not a surprise in the Distaff Handicap. She did what most expected her to do.
Well, and, you know, in addition to Caldwell and Oscar Flores, and what they pulled off with Inca Empire, I got to mention, if I'm not mistaken, Brian Hawk, the breeder of 4 winners on the night?
Right. And there was a moment early in the night where I just thought he was just going to set up a folding chair there in the winner's circle and just hang out, because literally almost every horse seemed like was coming from his breeding operation. He has really, really worked extensively hard in the last 10 years to build up that end of the business for his group here in Oklahoma, and it's worked out well for him. We're starting to see, he's especially starting to see the fruition of those efforts. 4 of the wins the other night were horses he had bred, and he had 2 of those that he kept and operated under his name, and nice wins in the 2-year-old male division for the juveniles with Mr. Omaha, that one winning his 2nd in a row, and I would have to think if all things come together well, we may see him. Joe Offler said maybe if they can find an Oklahoma Bred Alliance race coming up, probably there, then who knows, maybe in the springboard when you visit in December and the big race for the Open Company 2-year-olds.
Well, let's hear. Let's we got 2 choices. We could either do it chronologically, or we could, since we talked about the cup, let's do let's flesh out the cup story. And this really is quite clever. And a $20,000 claim by Danny to pluck this midshipman gelding, and a horse that had already won 6 times, was 6 for like 23, I think, at the time that they poached this horse, and they got it at Prairie Meadows. So what this reminds me of a little bit, Dale, is the way Ken Ramsey used to shop for horses ahead of the claiming crown. And he would scour, you know, the claiming ranks around the country and assemble a phalanx of horses, you know, leading to the claiming crown, and then win, you know, three, at least three, it seemed, every year. Doesn't do it as much anymore, but it sort of has that feel to it. And by the way, claiming crown, get your nominations in for Saturday, by Saturday, those of you that are planning on running November 16th at Churchill. Nominations close on the 26th, but it has that MO.
Absolutely. Danny Caldwell will tell you straight up, he is constantly looking for horses to claim, whether it be at the track he's currently operating in at Remington Park, which is, you know, the last 4 or 5 months of the season, or over the summertime at Canterbury or Prairie Meadows, and then of course in the early spring at Oakland or Sam Houston Fairgrounds, wherever they may be in this region of the country. And he's done a very good job of that, building his operation that way. And you look at Inca Empire, he gets it for 20, but just two races prior, Skylar Condon claimed it for 10,000 away from the Brian Hawk operation. So the horse was already on the move up a little bit, or they were at least trying to do so. And out of that $20,000 claim, when Caldwell gets it, the horse managed to win that race at a mile at Prairie. So, you know, it leaves the Hawk operation, goes two races for another group, and then Caldwell gets it, and the fourth time out under Caldwell wins the biggest race in Oklahoma Classics night. And again, that's the third time he's done that since 2012, winning the big race with horses he's claimed.
Amazing. And, of course, you know, goes on with this horse. And it feels like there's a lot that this one can do. Has one at lower levels, open company, can turf a little bit as well. This was a useful horse no matter what happened here.
Yeah, the turf, I think they tried that experiment one more time. I think they were just trying to get an out for this horse back on September 20th to get it ready for the Classics Cup. No money for this one, 6 tries an hour in the turf, so that experiment is pretty well proven. But again, they were probably just trying to get a race into him to make sure he had some sort of bottom to go into the cup, and it worked out. So, you know, hats off to them. They do it again. Eakley, we'll go jump ahead and we'll back up. The OKC Turf Classic, the finale on the night, the only back-to-back winner of the same race this time around in the Classics. Usually that happens fairly commonly, but not this year. But Eakley manages to get it done. Donnie Von Hemel, the second leading all-time trainer in Remington Park history, behind Steve Asmussen, in the winner's circle with Eakley for the second straight year of the Turf, defeating Tap the Dot and Mindbolt, who ran a big race for out of the Brett Calhoun operation, showing much better than his sixth place effort back on September 20th in the Red Earth over the turf then. Gave a nice fight, but Eakley prevails in the OKC turf.
Well, and Eakley on the front end, Richard Aramia, and this Cheyenne stable, and bred by Candy Meadows, 4-year-old, and just looking at Eakley's, this was fourth win.
Caleb Fossey, Geldy, and Von Hemel mentioned in the winner's circle, they're going to take a different way with this horse. They're not just going to campaign every year. He had his races at Remington last year in 23, came back his first start of the camp of 24, was in the Red Earth on September 20th, finished second there to Tap the Dot, and then wins the Classics turf race, the big one. And they just basically said, here's what we're going to do with him. We'll try to get him a couple more starts at Remington if it happens. If not, that's fine. He'll then take the time off, and we'll build him back up over next summer to get him ready for Remington Park next fall. This was an attack taken a few years back by trainer Kenny Nolan for the Richter family, big breeders here in the state, with Oki Ride, an older sprinter, that had done very well, but as he had gotten a little bit on in years, they decided, look, we'll get him his 3 to 5 races at that at Remington if it shapes up and the races go. If they don't, that's fine. We'll turn him out and just start again. And it worked out. They won the Oklahoma Classic Sprint with that operation, that mindset, 4 different times until he unfortunately passed at the age of 10. So it's worked in the past, and it looks like they're going to try to do the same thing with Eakley. Get him a few races every fall at Remington, go for the Classics turf race, and then, you know, let him have him be a horse for 6 months before we build him back to the next year. So it's kind of interesting way to do it.
And, you know, 580 was a nice mutual on Eakley.
Yeah, it was between him and Tap the Dot. My vote was kind of a little tad of a surprise there, but it was a short field, only seven. And a good swimmer ends up fourth, didn't really fire his race. We talked about him the other day. He's very capable, but it just didn't happen for him the other night. But equally the better of the lot of the turf on Friday night on the Classics finale.
We'll back up then, move toward the front of the card. Lake B with a pretty clear upset. I mean, was 7-2 second choice, but 4-5 breakable code just could not get to Lake B in the sprint.
No, it was a good stretch battle. Lake B prevailed. It was very tough in getting that one done, and trained by Miguel Silva, owned by Silva as well, his Silva Racing. Campaigning that one, Jose Alvarez up. The little bit of the surprise in this race was the poor performance of Fly to the Bank. Fly to the Bank, now a seven-year-old, as we said the other day, was a vet scratch prior last time he was entered. So we don't know what the situation was there. He looked fine, but he just didn't fire the race. It wasn't there for him, and he finishes out of the top four, nowhere to be found. So you had Lake B, Breakable Code, their good battle there with Lake B getting the edge. Our cornerstone, a nice price force at 520 on the show, running third. And then Legacy Plata from the Dirk Peary barn. Dirk Peary, here in Oklahoma, people know him primarily in the corridor seasons around Oklahoma. And occasionally he has a thoroughbred. And whenever he shows up, regardless of what you might think, it's worth a throw in on your exotics because Dirk doesn't ship it in just to say he was there. So. Kind of an interesting run with the six-horse Legacy account to finish fourth. Dark Afternoon, a bit of a disappointment, I thought, as well. Didn't fire, and nowhere to be found in the top four of the sprint. So Lake B, a game effort. It was a really good race, and Lake B getting the edge over Breakable Code.
Miguel Silva bred, owned, and trained this B Jersey gelding out of a Salt Lake mare. Love it. That's great, Salt Lake.
Silva had that one surrounded. He got all the money on that deal. So
right.
Breeding money, trainer money, owner money. He gets it all, so hats off for that. We mentioned Miss Code West, Classic Distaff Handicap. Unless she is sick, it's going to be awfully tough, I think, for Oklahoma Breds to knock her off. She just fires her race, does it fairly easily. Floyd Wethy picks up the stakes win on his birthday, the jockey, so hats off to him. And Kevin Scholl, small operation. I think he has six horses in the stable at Remington Park. So, and he does all his own work. He's a former jockey way back in the day. He gallops. He does the exercising. He does the workouts. He does it all. And hats off for his operation, getting a big score for Jeffrey and Julie Puryear out of Denton, Texas, with Miss Code West. And she's three. And there's an Oklahoma Red 3-year-old race coming up on the final night on Springboard Night. Do you see it stakes? And they're pointing Miss Code West for that one at a mile on the main track. So, again, that is Legacy. She ran a nice race, but just wasn't good enough to catch up to Miss Code West. But it was her first race, really, first race this year, stretching out, going two turns after two sprint victories to get ready for this event. C.R. Trout, owner, trainer, breeder on Let Us Legacy. We'll hear from her again. We may see a rematch of those two in that three-year-old you see it on the final night. So we look forward to that. But that was Miss Code West all the way around. Stormy is Blue, the long shot winner last year in the Distaff Handicap, finishing third.
Well, and she's a horse that has acquitted herself, coming out of the Oaks. I mean, the horses don't go off at 5 cents by accident. And Floyd Wethy very confidently handled. So Miss Code West. What's left for her on the calendar?
The very last day of the season, you see it stakes for Oklahoma Bred 3-year-old filly. That's where they're pointing her. I would not expect to see her prior to that, but if an allowance race comes up, it may go. We'll see. But doubtful. If they know she's going to enter, they're probably not going to jump on and they're going to chase her because she's just proven against Oklahoma Reds on this racetrack. Right now she's unbeatable. So we'll see what happens with the UC Stakes, the next one for her coming up for three-year-old Oklahoma Reds on the final night of December 13th.
Well, we talked about Brian Hawk and the amazing night that he had as an owner and as a breeder. And one of the ones where they handed him The trophy, the Distaff Sprint, Take Me Serious, she was 40 cents on the dollar. Richard Aramia again, and Joe Wolfalter.
Yeah, Take Me Serious, first win of the season. She'd been out a couple of times so far here at Remington, but had not managed to figure things out, but she gets it done in the Distaff Sprint, 6 furlongs. Kachina, nice race as a runner-up, picked up a check there. Nice neighbor, the Brett Calhoun charge was a scratch out of that race. That really helped open things up quite a bit for Take Me Serious. But another one for Brian Hawk out of Shawnee, his second owner win on the night. Joe Offholder, it was his second training win on the evening. That moved Offholder up to 6th all-time for Oklahoma Classics victories, his 7th training win in this series that started back in 1993. And Offholder really having a very good year. He is knocking on the door to have his best year ever as a trainer, and it's primarily because of the Brian Hawk horses in their operation. They're just all ready to go and firing on all cylinders right now, and Offholder enjoying what will be, I think, his best year when it's all said and done overall as a trainer as far as total earnings.
Take Me Serious. Kachina, the Carrie Craddock, Kirk Thoroughbred mare, was a good second in here at 12-1. And in fact, the Exactapate 25-40 with a 280 winner.
Yeah, that was a nice exotic for sure. If you had to take the series Kachina, you had to be happy with that. Stuart Allen did a great job on Kachina. I mean, he put her where she needed to be, gave her a chance, saved something to at least get up into the top two. Taking the series was well off the rail, so Stewart slid over and tried to drop down and save ground. That tactic worked out to keep her in the second place. She was beaten 3.5 lengths, but still she was right there and a good length ahead of Angel Kiss, who was the third place horse from the Austin Gustafson barn. So a nice effort by Elliott to get Kachina the money, but again, another one for the Hawk Offholder operation with Take Me Serious.
That gets us to one of the really popular Oklahoma breds in training, the 4-year-old Magna graduate filly, Do You Want to Dance? And again, 3-5 for a good reason.
Yeah, Terry Westmeyer owned and bred this one. 3 straight over the turf since Scott Young did some changing of the bid after a couple of races down at Lone Star. They were trying to get her going on the turf, and they finally figured it out. And she has not lost over the Remington grass course since she started here back on August 29th this season. So 3 in a row. Our turf course season is about to end because it finally got cold enough last week, a few nights in a row, to put the Bermuda into some dormancy. So we'll probably race another 2 weeks, maybe 3 max. You know, I say it was cold enough, but now here we are. We're going to be in the high 80s for most of this week. So our extended summer continues in Oklahoma City. But do you want to dance? Very sharp, 3 straight over the turf. Leander Gonzalez, another nice ride with her. Again, she is on top of her game right now, winning by 2 lengths. 1 Snoopy Run, she made a little bit of a bid, now 6. She's won this Distaff Turf twice in her career. And for a moment coming off the turn under Stuart Elliott, it looked like she was going to give Do You Want to Dance all she wanted down the stretch. But it just didn't shape up. Once they reached the furlong pole, this one was over, and that Snoopy Run had to set up for second.
The Oklahoma Classics Juvenile went as the 4th, and not only did Brian Hawk produce another winner here, but the Exacta for Brian and,
yeah, yeah, right.
And Joe.
Yeah, headed both ways with Cajun Stoops, horse that broke its maiden here in September, then ran a nice race to get second to Mr. Omaha, ridden by, I'm going to call him the ageless Luis Quinones, Louis Q. He's 59. He turned 60 in January. Wins this race easily by 5.5. And it was funny. His instruction was win this race no matter what. So he did everything he could to live up to that, but he didn't have to try too hard. Mr. Omaha had this one in control fairly easily at the top of the stretch and pulled away. Cajun Stoops came from off the pace to rally to gain second and a nice price. So big Exacta, $53 with a 2-1 on top of 11-1 for the Hawk operation in that one. Running third was Ship the Money out of the Jake Gellner barn. Cold Facts, Steve Asmus, one of his rare classic starters for Clark Brewster, finishing 4th in the Classics Juvenile for the 2-year-olds. And again, I'll be interested to see. They haven't said with Mr. Omaha or really any of these others yet what the plan is, but I would think if things go well, we might see him give the springboard a try. Gunny Highway was one I thought might run a little bit better race, but one, both the maiden over the turf goes back to the main track to sprint. They may just have to go back to the turf with this one. We'll see on Gunny Highway on the Ronnie Craven's bar.
69 Buyer, we should mention, and that was a nice move forward for Mr. Omaha from mid-50s in the two tries on the way to breaking the maiden. This looks like a nice horse, and in fact made 620 look like a nice investment. The fillies came before, and even money and confidently handled here by Quinonez. This is a Echo Town filly that Alan Williams sent out. Even money and Elegant Echo from a tricky post, actually, going three quarters.
Well, and Valencia, the younger brother of Luis, really put a great ride on this horse. It was his first time on. Leandro Gonzalez broke the maiden here in early September. But out of post 10 and a field of 10, six furlongs, Elegant Echo basically went to the front to break her maiden back in September. Couldn't really do that this time around. It was so far out there. So Belen did a good job of getting her into the race and then letting her kind of relax a little bit and then just rallied her from slightly off the pace, and she gets there by a half length. Alan Williams may have something with this one. This is Elegant Echo. Looks like she went from five furlongs to six in two races to win the stakes race against the Oklahoma Reds. We'll see if she goes into open company and test that water sometime down the road. But interesting story here. Edward Beat Melzer and his Revocable Trust own this filly, and it's hard to believe. I hope I can get to this age, and I hope when I do get to that age, if that's possible, I'm as sharp-witted and look as good as this guy does. Edward Melzer's 95, and he was in the winner's circle with this filly, happy as can be, and he is another one that's known primarily in Oklahoma racing circles. He's done most of his operations in the quarter horse world, but he's started to dabble in thoroughbreds the last couple of years, and there's been times where I've gone back to the barns in the quarter season, and Mr. Melzer's walking his horses around. He's out there helping his own trainer do work, I guess. So it's probably a little bit more of a hobby, extended hobby with the expense to it. But he's an interesting man, and I have to feel very happy for him with this nice win for Elegant Echo, undefeated after two starts. Alan Williams may have something here. We'll see what they do with her down the road.
Well, and 66 Buyer here, and that pairs up nicely with the 62 that she registered in the debut win. Well, and then beginning that was the classic slate, and the card started out with a pair of starter stakes, and you had a short price winner in the opener, Cabrera airing with Artistic Vision for Silva, but then you had one of the, I think the longest price of the card, Steve Williams, sent out Chuy Garza YG and 2280 here.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. And these starter races, these two races, if you can find a price and get lucky, you can have yourself a nice night. And this was one, really the biggest price of the night as well. But Steve Williams, owner and trainer of almost all of his horses, and he runs a lot. They're almost all Oklahoma bred, so you have to feel happy for a guy who's loyal to the program. I mean, he's grinding it out every day, and Shwee Garza YG gets him a nice little price, and $18,000 earnings check for winning the starter for the males at seven furlongs, and knocked off the heavy favorite. Absaroka was not the super heavy favorite, but at least the horse most people thought would get the job done. Actually, Mr. Wayside surprisingly went off the favorite in that race. I thought Absaroka would be, but it was Mr. Wayside at even money instead of Absaroka, who went off 3-1. So you get a nice exacta if you had those two, Three Guards of YG and Absaroka at 122 and change. So not bad there. But yeah, so the starters sometimes give a big surprise, sometimes not. And then you had Artistic Vision, like you mentioned, for Thumbs Up Racing and Miguel Silva winning the opener on Friday night in the Classics Distaff starter for the Phillies Mares.
Well, it looked like a nice night, and now the stakes calendar, it turns toward the big finish at the end of the year.
Yeah, we gear up for Springboard Mile. We'll start it on Friday night, Clever Trevor Stakes, the last local open prep stakes, if you will, for the Springboards. He runs on Friday night in the Clever Trevor. That one, the headliner, going 7 furlongs on Friday evening here. So we have that coming up, and then, again, two-year-old focus the rest of the way, trying to get to that Springboard, which is a Kentucky Derby qualifying points race for 2025. So we're looking forward to that and looking forward to your return here in a little more than a month.
It's funny coming back from New York and New Jersey this weekend. I booked all the travel, actually, and it kind of hit me right in the between the eyes, you know, that it's right here. I mean, as soon as we get back from Breeders' Cup, we're going to turn right around and get ready after Thanksgiving. You know, we got the symposium at University of Arizona, of course. We do a couple of days at Los Al for the Futurity and the Starlet. And then the last stop of the calendar year has become OKC. And it's become one of my favorite things to do.
Well, we look forward to having you. Hopefully the weather, I doubt it'll be in the 80s by the time you get here, but hopefully it's a comfortable 50 or something like that. So or maybe even 60. Or we'll take a 60-degree December night anytime.
Well, you got a big full field, too, for the Clever Trevor, and a horse that might open some people's eyes. Danny Pish has got that First Samurai gelding that won the Kip DeVille and won it first asking. 2 for 2. Jolly Samurai coming in hot with an 84 buyer. And Brett Calhoun has got one, a Mohaman, Dominant Spirit, that won well in the debut. So you've got a couple of serious, what look to be, you know, some serious two-year-olds gearing up.
Well, Jolly Samurai, the way he won the Kip DeVille also, again, if they can figure out how to come from off the pace at a super young age, it's kind of cool, because more often than not, it seems like they just want to go. And, you know, and then the first time, or they don't win it after going for the front, it deflates them a little bit. But Jolly Samurai was very impressive in that Kip DeVille with the rally to win in that 6 furlong event. Now stretches out a little bit longer for the Clever Trevor on Friday night. So looking forward to that. 7 furlongs, the headliner on Friday as we get geared up towards Springboard.
The Dale Day, everybody, and Oklahoma Classics night. And Brian, pull up. Yeah, the Grand Motion is coming on next before the break. Okay, Dale, well done, and we'll talk as we get closer to Springboard.
Looking forward to it. Everybody have a great Breeders' Cup in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. And have you qualified? You better put your qualifying hat on. Come on for.
I've got to work really hard at that. It hasn't happened yet. I liked it a lot better last year when it happened by Father's Day and the summer was done and I could not worry about it. So I got to keep working at it.
The Dale Day, everybody. The voice, and not just the voice. Dale does the communications. He does all the advances and recaps and does a great job on the written side of things as well, not just verbalizing the action on the oval. Thanks, Dale.
Thanks, Steve.
Dale Day, folks, and the Oklahoma Classics. Graham Motion's going to join us for a quick hit, and I didn't want to break and because he's got a sharp window here for about 10 minutes, and I wanted to get to Graham. I've been wanting to get to Graham for a few weeks, but I'm going to use the opportunity to talk to him about, well, the Gray Wizard. He didn't come to Far Hills, though. I gave him the same business that Sean Clancy always gives me. there's Graham Motion now.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Graham, good morning. In just a few minutes, and wasn't going to miss the opportunity. You missed the opportunity to come to Far Hills, though.
You know, honestly, everyone in my operation wanted to go and saddle that horse, so I let them go on. Ian saddled him with Keith Cooper, and they had a great day.
And, you know, it was a little tighter, I think, than maybe, you know, you were expecting. You didn't have to go to the Jersey Countryside, you know, to face off against Tom Morley.
Yeah, poor Tom. I felt bad for him being second, but somebody had to be second.
Listen to you. We've talked about the Grey Wizard a number of times, and, of course, you had the qualifying race that could have taken you to Australia. This was obviously an attractive opportunity, and I'm sure it'll be an attractive opportunity next year for him as well, this John Forbes. And how quickly did it get on your radar?
Yeah, so it's been on my radar for a while. Emma Carey works for Gallops for me in the morning, also works for the NSA, so she's been on to me about it for a little while, and I think it's a great opportunity. I mean, there just aren't that many two-mile races in the country, as we've found out this year with the Wizard, so this adds a race on the calendar, and I guess it was kind of our Melbourne Cup, if you like.
Ha! I was on hand at Nashville for the Nashville Gold Cup at Kentucky Downs, where he got kind of caught flat-footed. Is there any better way to describe it? I mean, essentially limited liability, had given everybody the slip at Kentucky Downs.
Yeah, I think Frankie rode a smart race that day. And look, it was very hard to make up ground at Kentucky Downs. It was very firm. He kind of walked out of the gate that day, which he has a tendency to be a little slow away. And you really can't make him change his style. He's going to run that way, he's going to run that way however the race is. I think fortunately on Saturday they didn't go too quickly, so Parker was able to kind of keep him in contact with the field. And in fairness, Parker gave him a great ride.
What else is there for him? It's obviously been, it's already been a nice enough year. Do you coast a little bit and kind of freshen up and run the same table next year?
Yeah, I think that's possible. I mean, there are the races in Dubai that I was going to mention to Aaron. We really haven't spoken. I haven't really spoken to Aaron or John, for that matter, John Frisetto, about his next race, but. Look, there is a race out in California. There's the Turf Cup, which he's run in before. I think the mile and a half out there on the very firm ground is quick for him. But the horse is in good form. He certainly could run again this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if we put him away and wait for next year now.
Well, and last year, in that, or 2 years ago in the Hollywood Turf Cup, he was beaten three quarters.
Yeah, so he is capable of doing that with a good trip, you know.
Well, and it is fun to look at. Honestly, it is fun to look at his PPs now and see, between the first try in the Gold Cup 2 years ago or last year, then this year's victory, Belmont Week at Saratoga, the Cape and Lopin is 12 furlongs, then the 2 1/16 in the Gold Cup, and then 2 miles. There are these opportunities. And, Graham, do you discuss this with many racing secretaries given how far flung, your operation is and all the places you run about putting more races like this up?
I mean, look, I have brought it up before. I even brought it up to the Breeders' Cup, some guys on the Breeders' Cup. I think the concern with the Breeders' Cup is they already have so many grass races that, just say they're in a place like Keeneland and the ground goes soft and then they run a two-mile race, it's almost like running two races over a turf course. But I do think it's a shame because I think, I think Colonial Downs has a missed opportunity. They really don't run longer races, and I think they would fill them no problem. Gillian in Maryland, the racing secretary, she'll put on some mile-and-a-half races, and they fill every time pretty much. So I don't really understand why there's such a lack of interest in having these races, and not to mention they're just exciting races to watch too.
No, having seen three of the last four starts live of the Grey Wizard, I can tell you, and certainly Saturday, the two races that everybody, you know, were having to evaluate for the cross country pick five, the Grand National, and then the John Forbes, they got won by the odds on, you know, I take that back, because Snap Decision actually was second choice to Galvin, but they were won by the two logicals in the most exciting fashion. So
right, interesting. Yeah, and that really was good. A great race too.
Oh, the Grand National was, I mean, that was some win. I mean, you must know Jack Fisher pretty well.
Very much so. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Those are my old roots in the jumping game.
Exactly. Exactly right with Jonathan. Been wanting to call you for a few weeks, actually, with a number of things. But you also, we should go back to the Monday holiday. You sent Queen of the Mud out to win the swing time.
Yeah, that worked out really well. I mean, we've always kept her short up until now. Brad and I talked about stretching her out, and again, she got a great ride and really put it together nicely. So, you know, we wanted to get the black type win for her. She'll get a little time off in Ocala now, and then she'll join us in Palm Meadows in December.
Well, the one just to show you how long it is since I've been wanting to talk to you, we haven't had a chance to discuss Izzy Vungu Vungu, and let's shift a little bit into Breeders' Cup mode. You know, talk about the South African import.
Yeah, look, he's an exciting horse, Steve. We pre-entered him obviously in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. I think he should get in. You know, and I only wanted to, we didn't have much time with these horses. They did 2 months of quarantine where they really had no exercise at all. They literally just walked out of the stall and up and down the corridor in the quarantine facility. So we started from scratch with both him and the filly for the Breeders' Cup filly and Mare Turf. So we really had to have things fall into place, and I wanted to run him only one time, so he kind of needed to win that one race. And he got the job done, and I tell you what, he's done super since. I'm excited to get him out there.
Well, you know, he's going to come in, I think, as a price. I mean, everybody's going to be a price once you get past Cogburn and Bradsell.
Sure. No, I think he'll be a price. I mean, he does have a tremendous following, this horse, which might have some effect on the odds internationally. But, you know, he has a good following in South Africa, and I think they're all really excited to see him. And there'll be a good group coming over to watch him run.
You mentioned the filly and Mare Turf. Let's quickly hit how many did you enter yesterday?
So we entered Beach Bomb in the filly and Mare Turf.
Right.
She ran out there and was third in the prep at Santa Anita.
The Rodeo Drive.
In the Rodeo Drive. I thought she ran a sneaky good race. You know, with her, I felt she needed to run a couple of times to get her to the Breeders' Cup. She won a win and you're in South Africa. First time I ran her at Monmouth, it was obviously a little short for her, going a mile and a little bit, probably a mile 16. But I thought her effort in the Rodeo Drive was very solid, and she's actually, Alice moved to Del Mar with her yesterday, so she'll have her first day galloping there today.
Well, so you took the full advantage of the timing, right? 12 days out was the opportunity to bed down at Del Mar.
There's no real reason to keep her at Santa Anita any longer, and I wanted to get her over there so she can have a breeze on the turf course this weekend.
Very nice. You know, how many recent South African imports have come your way? Because I know Golden Hostess ran the other day. I noticed the South African in that allowance.
Yeah, she ran super. What a good race she ran.
Right?
Yes, I have another horse for those connections. So I think there were 12 horses on the shipment that came over back in the spring, and four or five of them came to us, including these two that hopefully will run in the Breeders' Cup.
Excellent. And who? Any other? What'd you do with your juveniles? Because there was a couple of juveniles that were nosing around as potential participants.
Yeah, we pre-entered Coretto.
You did.
Who was third in the winning year in at Aqueduct. You know, right. I think she's going to be... she'll probably go to the committee and might need some help to get in. But she was third in the Miss Grillo. She's beaten two lengths. Hasn't really done much wrong, to be honest.
And that's it? Those are the three?
Those are the three, yeah. We'll run test score on the undercard in the two-year-old race on the undercard on Friday. He broke his maiden opening day at Keeneland.
Nice. Well, and also, I mean, when it comes to, I mean, it's not like you didn't have some other, you know, some other candidates and horses that have enjoyed, you know, nice seasons. And Trickery comes back in the Bryan Station on Saturday.
Yeah, it's a pretty solid group of horses.
Yeah.
I think it's a great race. You know, I worry a little bit with him. It's coming at the end of the year. He shipped out to California last time. But I tell you, if he's not doing well, he's not showing it, because he seems to handle his races so well, and he just thrives on it. And he actually shipped out to Kentucky last night.
Very nice. And well, and Memorialize went out as well for the debut.
Yeah, showed on Friday. Tough spot to come back in, you know, after almost a year layoff. But she's doing very well. We had her ready to run earlier in the summer, and we had to back off her a little bit. So, you know, I kind of wanted to take advantage of a three-year-old filly options in a graded race. So we'll find out if she's back to where she was last year.
Well, finally, Grand Motion joining us after the Grey Wizards win and the John Forbes. You're going to get a call, I think, from – you may have already gotten a call from Bill Gallo on a topic we just sort of visited. so you can expect that. But, Graham, you got a bunch of maidens that are looking to graduate here over the next few days. Love Pack today, actually, at Presque Isle, and then Love Me Sweet this week at Keeneland, Delayed at Laurel. I mean, you're all over the place. Fantasmical at Keeneland on Friday as well.
Yeah, trying to get some of these guys, just trying to get them started on the grass before we go to Florida. Love Me Sweet will be a scratch. Love Pack runs today on the synthetic up at Presque Isle. And Delayed is a filly we quite like for the Wertheimers. I mean, she may need a race going a mile first time out, but she's a filly that I think has a future. Fantasmical has trained well. I believe Chad started her as a two-year-old for John Clay. We actually had her sister here. So, yeah, we've got some action. We've also got the Grey Wizard's brother running on Friday at Keeneland, the Ginger Wizard, who Eclipse recently acquired from Joseph O'Brien.
Look at you, the Ginger Wizard. I'm guessing a chestnut.
I believe he is, yes.
and then second time back for the filly, too, over the weekend at Keeneland, Illuminatrice.
Yeah, it's very disappointing first time out. I mean, I really like this filly. She never got involved on the dirt going 7 furlongs. I'm hoping that this will turn her around. She's a filly that we've always thought quite a lot of, so I thought this was the way to go, stretch her out and get her on the grass, and we'll see where we're at. She's a great big two-year-old filly, but she's trained well in the morning. I was very confused by her first start, to be honest.
Well, and that was a pretty that lucky copy. I can recall the dam was all right. Did you train that dam?
These fillies for the Wertheimers? No, I did not. But you know, these are all good families for the Wertheimers. Lucky to have them.
Well, and the Motion's a good family as well. Graham, I appreciate it, and we will see you at Del Mar.
Thanks, Steve. Take care.
Graham Motion, everybody, and the Grey Wizard, and how about that? The Ginger Wizard. That's ridiculous. it's kind of cool, though. Hold on. Now we got to go. Look, was that Friday or Saturday? Let me go back. And here's a lucky copy was Todd. Todd trained that dam. But it sounds like there's some expectations for Illuminatrice. The Ginger Wizard is in the fifth on Friday. I have not pulled the Keeneland PPs. I've got enough PPs on my desk, and then of course tomorrow when the pre-entries come out, there'll be even more, another stack of PPs. But it's a mile and 3/16 affair. So the Gray Wizard esque in terms of distance, and this was Chestnut Colt, and by Calix, the Kingman son, and won broke the maiden in the fourth career start that came at Tremor in August. Had pretty much toured Ireland on his way to graduating. Debuted at Dundalk on the Polly, and then Ferry House for a three-year-old debut. And it really did not run a bad race. In fact, this horse has one of those fun things in the PPs. Was fourth in the debut, was third in the second start, second in the third start, and then won in the fourth start. Not just one, but one in a romp. Went from Dundalk to Ferry House to Killarney to Tremor. And as it happens, romped on the soft. So keep that in the back of your mind. Liked it with give in the ground, as they say. Let's head. Now we can head to the break, Brian. Let's do it. Yes. Oh boy. I just got an important text from Guy Torsalieri. The world will know where the Rockefeller Center tree is coming from very soon. I don't know if that means the press conference is today or what. I hate how he teases me with this. Unbelievable. I love it. All right, we'll see. Nick Tamaro is going to join us at the bottom of the hour after Andy Serling. And I don't know if you saw the retweet. Andy's not going to do videos this year. I think he did this last year. He's going to do the live Twitter conversation, and he'll go through the Breeders' Cup his Breeders' Cup opinions that way, and I'm sure he'll give us the details next Wednesday, week from tomorrow. Twitter spaces, that's right. Twitter spaces. All right. Thanks to Graham, who had a busy morning. He had horses working, and then he had an 11 o'clock meeting. So I appreciate him getting that in, and hopefully next year he'll come to Far Hills, because he'll really enjoy it. It's funny how he said everybody in the office wanted to go. Can't blame him. It's got to be on everybody's list. Let me see what else I've got. I reached out, obviously not today, but we've got to talk about the lawsuit that Phil Serpy and Jonathan Wong have filed, and against ISA, lawyer Brad Bailey is handling both cases, and I know in Phil's case he's pushing for a trial, and this involves a clenbuterol positive that came out over the summer, and again, I mean, Phil Serpy, this is the kind of horseman that we're trying to sideline. That right? It's just amazing. So I'm hoping to get that in as early as tomorrow to talk about what's going on there. take a break. We'll come right back. Andy's going to join us in just a minute or two after our return at the races. Sirius XM.